Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Be'ah Daf Yud Dalid. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin our shiur four lines from the top at the Mishnah on Daf Yud Dalet. Before we begin the Mishnah, we glance at the side where we have our Nosei Mivneh heading, the Nosei, the topic, and Mivneh structural note. A double underline is featured, and it highlights the expressions Tavlin, which are spices, and melach, salt. Kesi shasam, that's their crushing, the crushing or the grinding of spices and salt on Yom Tov in anticipation of preparing a dish. How much change does one crush in a regular fashion or with a change because it is Yom Tov and we don't want our Yom Tov activities to resemble weekday activities? These are considerations in looking at this particular area of halacha. After all, we do hold that meleches oichel nefesh, things that you are doing in the preparation of food, are allowed. But how far do we go with that principle in the context of crushing, preparing of spices and salt? Beis Shammai Omrim, Tavlin Nidoichin B'modoich Shel Eitz. Rashi at the top says, Modoch Hu Buchna, it's a pestle, in the context of mortar and pestle. Shemakin Bo Kedarko, you can use it to hit with it, to crush with it in a regular way. The Ein Tzorach Eloshinui Zuta. There's a girs on the side that we're reading, and that is that all that you require is a small change, and that's in the that you're using a wooden pestle, that might be considered the small change. Avol b'melach b'mokim shiyesh melach gasa. However, with regard to salt, and this is what really the Mishnah goes on to say, with regard to salt, when you're dealing with coarse salt or rock salt, and it needs to be ground down, so b'mokim shiyesh melach gasa, then b'pach shel cheres yiduchenu v'lo b'meducha. Use a clay pestle, and not with the regular pestle. So that's what the Mishnah goes on to say. Havehamelach bepach or ubeitz haporur. The pach, we saw Rashi point out, this was an earthenware, a clay device. And the Eitz Haporur, so Rashi on this says, Kaf Gedola, large spoon, Shikorin, and he gives a French word, the Melch Boy Shinui, salt, and its crushing requires more of a change, something more unusual. Now, we turn to the Mishnah, we continue in the Mishnah, Ubeis Hillel Omrim, Tavlin, Nidorchen, Kedarkon, B'modok Shel Evan. As far as Beis Hillel is concerned, when it comes to spices, you can crush them using the regular device, a stone pestle, a stone crushing device. V'melach b'modoch shel eitz. When it comes to salt, there you see Beis Hillel acknowledges that you need a change, but it's not a big change. We saw before Rashi on Beis Shammai described the modoch shel eitz as a shinui Zuta, a small change. And hence, you can see Beis Hillel is more lenient, notches everything down a bit. Now, we have a topic heading that we have on the side of the Gemara, with also a structural note. My taima, and on the side, we're reading our note on the side, my taima delikule amu melech boi shinui, aliba de mishnah seinu. Why is it that according to our Mishnah, all the opinions that appear at Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai say that salt requires some level of shinui, of the unusual. Under the Mivneh heading, we feature the bow tie and Roman numerals 1 and 2. As you scan ahead in the Mishnah, you can see we have that marking appears in the here and later. These are Shnei Deois Iboi Shinui B'Ksishas Melach. Two opinions on this very point. Does salt require a shinui in its crushing? So, Roman numeral number 1 explains the approach taken by our Mishnah. Roman numeral number 2 introduces another approach. So we continue now in the Gemara. Dekuli alma mias, everyone, however, does agree. Melach baya shinoi, that the crushing of salt on Yom Tov necessitates a change from the usual. Mai taimo, why is that? Rav Huna, Rav Chista. So within this Roman numeral number 1, we have two opinions why the required change for salt. Chad Omar, kol hakderos kulon tzrichos melach, v'ein kol hakderos tzrichos tavlin. Person, before he starts cooking, he knows that he's going to need salt for all kinds of dishes, from vegetarian dishes to meat dishes. Salt is a necessary ingredient. So he knew this from the day before. Being that's the case, he should have crushed salt from the day before. And not having done that, so we say, now that you waited for Yom Tov to crush, we expect you to do it in a shinui. After all, Yom Tov is supposed to be celebrated as a holiday, not being involved with activities that you could have done the day before. So, that's as far as salt is concerned. Now, as far as spices are concerned, not all dishes require spices. So a person didn't know the day before what he was going to prepare on Yom Tov. It was something that was unsure, we'll say. And therefore, he couldn't be expected to crush spices that he might not have needed to begin with. That's one approach. Hence, by salt, everyone agrees you have to do it b'shinui, not as much when it comes to spices. The Chad Omar, kol ha-tavlin mefigin taimon, umelach eino mefigo taimon. The other approach says that if you would have prepared spices the day before, tavlin or spices, mefigin taimon, they lose their taste. Their taste is neutralized, or it's not the same as when it's fresh. Salt, on the other hand, does not lose its taste over time. In other words, having crushed salt the day before wouldn't change the taste that salt imparts one iota had you done it yesterday and not waited for today. My binayu, what is the difference between these two approaches? Iko binayu, the point of difference would be the yoda mai kedero boi livshuli. One scenario would be where on Erev Yom Tov he knew for sure what he was going to cook up. So, as far as spices are concerned, since he knew the day before which spice he would require, so if he didn't crush it the day before and waited till Yom Tov, so then the spice will have to be crushed with a shinui. According to the second Chad Omar, even if he knew the day before what kind of dish he was going to prepare and which spice he needed, it still wouldn't have been optimal for him to crush it the day before because of the loss in potency, loss in change, loss in taste. So even if he knew what kind of dish he was going to prepare, according to the second opinion, we would not expect him to have crushed the spice the day before. Inami, another point of difference between the two Lishonos is Morika. Morika is a type of spice that has the salt quality insofar it does not lose its taste when it's done the day before. So according to the first approach, which didn't focus on taste, but focused on what dish he was going to prepare. Well, he didn't know he was going to prepare a dish that needs morika, so he wouldn't have been expected to do that the day before. Hence, on Yom Tov, it won't require a shinui. However, according to the second approach, since morika wouldn't lose its taste from the day before, if you end up using morika on Yom Tov, we're going to tell you have to crush it with a shinui, because you should have done that the day before, not having the excuse that it would lose its taste. Omar Rav Yehuda Mar Shmuel. Now we have Roman numeral number 2. Kol hanidoichin nidoichin kedarkon vafilu melach. All items that nidochen, that need to be crushed, can be crushed in their normal, their regular way, even salt. The Gemara asks, "V'ho amris melach b'yashinoi?" But did we not say that all tanoim that we've seen till now require a shinui when it comes to salt crushing? So what is Rav Yehuda Omar Shmuel based on when he says melach does not need shinui? Who the Omar ki hai tano? Rav Yehuda Omar Shmuel is based on the following Tanaic source. Tisanya, Omar Rabbi Meir, Lo Nechliku Be Shamai Ube Sila Al Hanidoichin, Shenidoichin Kedarkon Umelachi Mohen. Rabbi Meir, who is a later Tanaic authority, commenting on Be Shamai Be Sila, he says they don't argue regarding items that need crushing, that they can be crushed in their regular way and salt with them. Now, Shinidochen kedarkon umelach imohen, Rashi says, on imohem, melach utavlin keechod. And on the side, there's a little note, pirush velo bevasachas elo bepamachas, ze achar ze. When you are crushing items, and you're going to crush on Yom Tov salt and spices in one sitting, so to speak, so you can do the crushing of salt, of spices and salt, without doing a shinui. Lo nechliku elo lo ducha b'fnei atzma. The controversy between Beis Hillel and Shammai arises only when you're dealing with the crushing of salt by itself. Can you crush salt kedarka in a normal way like you would spices when you're crushing salt by itself? Shebe Shammai omru melach b'pach uveitzapor litzli avololik deira. Beis Shammai says you can crush the salt using the pach, which we said before is a clay pestle and a wooden spoon, if you're doing litzli. Litzli means dover muat, a small amount. As we have mentioned in previous shiurim, that there was a practice to salting meat is for the purpose of removing blood from the meat. So when you see the expression to crush salt, litzli means crushing a small amount of salt, because basically roasting the meat is a method for getting the blood out. The exposure of the meat to the fire, to the open fire, that will draw the blood, which is forbidden. Blood is forbidden for the Jewish people to consume, and the roasting over an open fire will draw it out. However, there was a practice to add a bit of salt to the meat before the roasting. Kedera is for cooking. In the case of cooking, so the meat or chicken must be heavily salted. Hence, that's not called a dover muat. That would be a lot of salt. So Beis Shammai is saying what he does regarding the crushing of salt by itself. A small amount may be crushed, and it must be done with a shinui, as we saw. Ubeis Hillel Oimrim, and Beis Hillel says, and there's a bracketed line because there's a loshen in here that needs upgrading. So if we skip to the bracketed line, we continue lechol davar. Beis Hillel says, even for kedera, even for salt for meat that will be cooked up in water, not roasted, which it means a lot of salt, and also kedarka. Rashi adds that point. Beis Hillel says that the salt can be crushed by itself, large amount, without any change, without any shinoi. So, as far as the sugya is concerned till now, we see two broad approaches when it comes to salt. The first approach, Roman numeral number one, had the tanoim requiring a shinui when it came to salt crushing. According to Roman numeral number two, we saw that that itself was a machloikes tanoim, whether salt needs a shinui in its crushing. We continue in the Gemara. Omar le Rav Acha Bardala Libre. Rav Acha says to his son, Ki daichis, when you crush salt, atzli atzluye vedoch. Atzli means to tilt the bowl, tilt it to the side. He is holding like Shmuel, that salt can be crushed using a stone pestle. However, and Rashi adds this, a little shinui is necessary. So the little shinui is the tilting of the bowl. But otherwise, you can crush the salt using a modoch shel even, a stone pestle. Rav Sheshes, we continue in the Gemara, Rav Sheshes shoma kol buchna. Rav Sheshes heard the sound, calls the sound, buchna, buchna is a pestle, but it's referring here, he heard the sound of salt crushing. Omar, Rav Sheshes reacted, he says, Hai lav migavei de besoi hu. This is not coming from my house. I forbade them in using a stone pestle without a shinui. So that is what he was hearing, though. He was hearing the crushing of salt as one would hear it during a weekday. And his reaction was, it's not coming from my house because I forbade that on Yom Tov. V'dilma, the Gemara asks, Atzli Atzli, it's true that you forbade the salt crushing without any shinui. Maybe they're tilting the bowl, and that would conform with your requirements. So the Gemara re-answers, Deshame Dehave Tzolil Kole. He heard that it was a very pure, it was a shrill sound, indicating that the impact of the pestle on the salt was not at some type of angle as would be in the case of a tilted bowl. Question, V'dilma Tavlin Havu, maybe what they were doing, and maybe the sound that he was hearing was a clear, shrill sound, but it was the crushing of spices that don't require any shinui. So why was he so sure that it was not coming from his house and they were doing something acceptable? Answer, Tavlin Nevuchi Manbich Kalaihu. In the crushing of spices, there isn't a shrill sound that is produced. It's a type of dull sound, and hence Rav Sheshes knew that it wasn't spice crushing that he was hearing. Might be pointed out quite parenthetically, Rav Sheshes was blind, and it's not surprising that he was sensitive to sound. Hence, the Gemara reports this story with concerning sound and Rav Sheshes. Before we continue in the Gemara, there's a note on the side, the no say, the topic heading, Shimush b'machteshes. We're going to speak about the use of a grinder. And you'll see a diamond marking that appears in the Gemara. These are under our Mivneh. We explain Hezberim l'Braisa. These are going to be explanations of the Braisa that says Ein Oisin v'chule, the Braisa that opens up this section of Gemara. So we open up with a brisa, and it's not going to make too much sense, and hence we need the Gemara to explain it. And it does that with the Hochi Ka'omar introduction, the diamonds that you see, and this will continue to the top of Omid Beis. Tonu Rabbonon, Ein Oisin Tisni, V'Ein Koishin B'machteshes. So first we'll translate. Ein Oisin Tisni means one does not produce tisni. Tisni is a type of crushed wheat. In fact, it's a case where the wheat grain is crushed into four parts. And Rashi explains that that requires a great deal of trouble, expenditure of effort. Torach in Hebrew. We don't do this on Yom Tov. It's a great deal of Torach. Now, that leaves one room to think that other kinds of wheat preparations that don't involve that much Torach are allowed. So that you can use a machteshes. Machteshes is a crusher or grinder for something that doesn't require a lot of tircha. And then the source goes on to say, "Ve'ein kosher machteshes." You don't use a grinder at all. The Gemara asks, "Tarti." So you have two halachas that seem to contradict one another. The word "tarti" literally means two, but two contradictory things. The beginning of the Brisa says you can't use a crusher for things that require a lot of effort. The second part says you can't use a crusher at all. The Gemara continues, "Hachi komar." This is how you're supposed to understand the source. Matam ein oisin tisni. Why is it that we don't prepare tisni? Lefi she'en koishin b'machteshes. Because one does not use a grinder. So Moore asks, v'leimo ein koishin b'machteshes. Why not just teach you don't use a grinder? And if you tell me that you don't use a grinder, I'll understand that you're not allowed to make tisni. Rashi adds that a stam machteshes, when you see the word machteshes, it's a large one. So the Gemara explains, E toni ein koishin b'machteshes. Had the source simply taught we don't use a grinder, havemino hanimino b'machteshes gedoilo. I would have thought that the restriction concerns only a large one. Avo machteshes tano emo shabir domi. But using a small one would be okay, even for tisni. Komash malon, therefore the source has to teach me that we don't make tisni at all. And that is because we don't use a grinder, we don't use any grinder. And now in this context, we have to understand that machteshes is not the standard large one, but it's a large one and a small one. And that we figure from the fact that the source says we don't make tisni at all. The Gemara continues, v'hotanya, but have we not learned, ein koishin b'machteshes gedoilo, avo koishin b'machteshes ketana? We don't use a large one, but we do use a small one. The small one is considered, it's considered kilachar yad, something unusual. A small grinder is used only for spices. So this brisa then would contradict the conclusion that we reached just before, which suggested that the source is telling you don't use a grinder at all. Here we're saying you do, you can use a small one. Omar Abaye, ki tanya nami masniso machteshes gedoilo tanya. And as far as understanding this, Rashi points out that this is a kind of reversal of what we said before. Before, we explained the opening source in the what's called the ma ta'am ka'omar fashion, that the end of the source was an explanation of the beginning. In other words, the beginning said we don't make tisni, and that is because we don't use any grinder. Now we're departing from that approach, and we're saying that the original source that says you don't make tisni, that is only with reference to the large grinder. And we'll take a look at Rashi, four lines from the bottom. Kitanya nami masnisen deliel. The source that opened up this section is as well machteshes gedoilo tanya, is referring to the large grinder. Velo temo, and don't explain like we did before, matam komar, elo tarti kotoni, but rather two separate things are taught. Here, don't be confused, the word tarti here means simply two, not contradictory as we explained before, but two separate points. Vahochi komar, number one, ein oisin tisni klal afilu biktana. As far as tisni is concerned, we don't prepare it even with a small grinder. The second part of the source says we don't do other grindings with a large grinder, but other grindings can be done using a small grinder. We continue now at the top of Omid Beis with a third approach. Rova Omar Lo Kashya Ha'lon V'ha'lehu. We had two sources. The first source said we don't use a grinder at all, as we demonstrated with the approach number one earlier. And then we have source number two that says you can use a small grinder. So Rava says they are really referring to two different places. Ha'lon V'ha'lehu. Lon means for us, and lahu means for them. So, what does that mean? So, Rashi explains, ha lon, de les lon avdi de mezazli. There was this reality that people who had slaves, servants, they did not take halacha seriously. And they would take advantage, so to speak, that if there was a heter, if there was permission for using, let us say, a small grinder, they would use a large grinder and then claim they were using a small grinder. So with regard to a population like that where there were servants on the scene, there the halacha bans use of all grinders, not giving them any opening. However, for us, Lon, where we don't have servants, so the halacha will allow the use of the small grinder. The large grinder, on the other hand, is considered not appropriate for Yom Tov. It's not Yom Tov Dik, it's a zilzel to Yom Tov. Rav Papa ikla lebei Mar Shmuel. Rav Papa visited the home of Mar Shmuel. Aisi le daisa v'lo ochal. They brought to him daisa. Daisa is a dish made of wheat. Some would like to translate it maybe as porridge, but I'm not sure that that's going to fit into this particular section of Gemara. So, but it is a wheat dish. He did not eat it, and he didn't eat it because, of course, this story is taking place on Yom Tov, and he didn't eat it because it was made with a large grinder. So the Gemara asks, "V'dilma b'machteshes k'tana avdua?" Maybe it was prepared with a small grinder. So, answer number one: the chazia d'havedayek tfei. He saw that the wheat was very finely ground, and that would be something that a small grinder could not accomplish. Question: V'dilma me'esmal avdua? But still, maybe it was crushed the day before. Before Yom Tov, in a permissible fashion. The answer is no. The Chazia d'Avad Koluf Tziare. Rashi says, Tzohar Mar Iso Hoya Koluf V'lovon. It had a very white, bright appearance to it, and that could be only if it was freshly ground. V'boyesemo, another explanation is, Shiny Beimar Shmuel, that the house of Shmuel was different. The ika pritzusa de avdi, there was the carelessness of servants. In other words, in the house of Shmuel there were servants, and that even though it's in a region where there aren't servants in general, but by his house there were servants, and hence Rav Papi did not partake of it, being that servants will be mezalzel and they're suspect of using a large grinder. We continue now with a new Mishnah and a new topic. On the side, under our Nosei, we've simply turned this Borer. Borer is the separation of debris from non-debris, from that which you want. Separation of food from the non-food in a mixture fashion. When you crush, we'll say, Mishnah uses the example of legumes. kitnios, so you'll have the actual seeds or desirable part, and you'll have the pods and the shells that you don't want. Borer is one of the avos malachos, one of the forbidden activities when it comes to Shabbos and Yom Tov. Is there a way to do it in a permissible fashion? Haborer kitnios b'Yom Tov, one who is separating the beans from the waste on Yom Tov, b'Shama Yomrim, borer ochel v'ochel. You would pull out the food part from the bowl and eat it, leaving behind the waste, the shells, the part that's not edible. Ubeis Hillel omrim borer kedarko, becheko, bekonon uvetamchui. Beis Hillel says that you can do the borer action in a regular way, using these devices, a konon and tamchui, but not these other devices, a tavla nor a napa, velo bekvora. These are devices, the tavla, napa, and kvora, are devices that are designed for the action of borer, of separating. And that far to borer in the normal way. Now, the normal way, in contrast with Beis Shammai, Beis Shammai says you pull out the food and eat it. Beis Hillel is saying you're not restricted to that, but you can pull out the debris and leave behind the food, which is the more normal way of doing borer. And you can even use these implements, but not the implements that are designed. For example, a sifter or a sieve, a strainer, these cannot be used. Rabban Gamliel Omer Af Mediach V'Sholet. Rabban Gamliel's, method is to pour water over the mixture you have of the beans and their debris, and the debris will float to the top, and you skim off the top the debris. Tanya, Omar Rabban Gamliel, Bamed Vamumurim, under what circumstances does Beis Hillel allow you to remove the debris and throw it away? That's Kishoichem Ruba Alapsolis, when there is more food quantity-wise than there is debris. So you're going to be investing, we'll say, effort on the lesser quantity item, the debris. So pull out the debris and leave behind the food. Avol, psolis rubal oichel. However, if it's reversed, that there's more debris than food, divrei hakol noitel es oichel umineachas psolis, and everyone, even Beis Hillel, will agree, pull out the food, like we saw Beis Shammai say in the Mishnah, pull out the food and leave behind the psolis, the debris. The Gemara asks on this case, this second case of psolis meruba, can it be that we're even moving it around in the first place? Psolis meruba aloichel mi ikoman deshori. In that case, where you have the majority of debris, who would allow any movement whatsoever? We just said in the source that if psolis meruba aloichel, pull out the oichel. But 1 second. The majority is debris. Debris is muktzeh. This debris has no use, has no Yom Tov use, and the food is the minority. So wouldn't you say that the food is botel? It becomes nullified to the debris, and all is forbidden, and you can't move it at all. It's a bowl of, in halachic terms, it's a bowl of debris, and debris being that has no Yom Tov use is muktzeh, and it's also betilta. You can't move it around. So what's the source talking about when it says in Psolis Mubal Ochel that you can pull out the food? Lo tzricha, so the source is necessary. De nofish betircha v'zutar b'shi'ura. Zutar b'shi'ura means small in quantity. In fact, the psoles is less in quantity. The rov is, in fact, food. However, when we say that the psoles meruba, it means that it's nafish betircha. Nafish means a lot of tircha, of trouble. So if there's a lot of trouble in removing the psoles, being that the majority of the bowl is food, pull out the food and leave behind the psoles. And how, when does that come up? That would be a case where, let's say, the psoles is a very, very fine type of debris. Rashi uses the expression as psoles dak. It's very fine or thin, and it's a lot of trouble in getting it out. So we want you to be memayit betir, we want you to expend less effort, so expend it on the food. However, if the trouble in removing the psoles is greater than the clarify. If that in fact is the case, that the psoles removal is greater tircha, then everyone will agree, remove the food. However, if the effort to remove the food is greater and there is less quantity of psoles, concerning that, Beis Hillel says, just remove the psoles. It's less tircha. Rabban Gamliel Omer, we continue in the Gemara, Af Mediach V'Shoyle. We saw in the Mishnah the pouring of water over the mixture of debris and beans, and the debris floats to the top, and you can skim it off the top, and you've accomplished your borer. Tanya, Omer Rebbe Elozer, Rabbi Tzoda, Kachoyim in Hogam Shalbeis Rabban Gamliel. Rabbi Elozer tells us the practice in the house of Rabban Gamliel was Shehoyim Avien Delim Mole Adoshim. They would bring a pail full of adoshim. Adoshim is a type of vegetation. Umetzifin olav mayim. They would pour over it water. Vinimsa oichel lamata upsoles lamala. The result of that was that the food would sink to the bottom and the psoles would flow to the top. V'hatanyo ipcha. Do we not have a Tanaic source that says the opposite? Namely, the food was at the top and the psoles was at the bottom. Lo kashya, there's no contradiction. Ha ba'afra, ha ba'gili. Depends of what type of debris you're talking about. In the case of afra, dirt or sand, that would sink to the bottom. That would be beneath the food. The food would float higher than the dirt. If it's gili, if it's straw, then that will float to the top above the ochel. The Mishnah. And this introduces a new topic. On the side, you can see we have a nosei, the topic heading Shiluach Monois. This involves the sending of gifts on Yom Tov to your friend. The Mishnah, Beisham Yomrim, Ein Mishalchin B'Yom Tov Ela Monois. And Rashi explains, Monos are Dovor HaMuchan V'Eino Osui L'Hanicho L'Mochar. It's something that is ready to use, something you're not going to leave till tomorrow. For example, pieces of meat that are already cut and ready to serve your guests, and likewise fish. Those are monos. Ubeis Hillel, Omrim, we continue in the Mishnah. Mishachin behemo chaya ve'oif bein chayin bein shchutin. One can send to his friend animals, behemo chayin oif, different types of animals, whether they're chayin alive or they are slaughtered. Mishalchin yenus shmonim usiltos v'kitnios. One can send yenus or wine, shmonim oil, siltos flour, kitnios are beans, avol loy tavua, not grain. Grain is basically used for making flour. So that grain, Rashi says, avolo es hatvua, she'eno ruya hayoim. It's not fit today. She'en tochlim b'yom tov. We don't grind flour on Yom Tov. She'elo litcho me'esmo, volo tofik time. It should have been ground the day before. It's not something whose taste dissipates. The Mishnah continues, Rabbi Shimon Matir b'tvua. Rabbi Shimon says you can send grains as is on Yom Tov, and Rashi explains, He might cook up a pot of barley. He might cook up a pot of wheat. Rashi adds as well, and if he intends to grind them, he'll use a small grinder so that the wheat, the grains, have Yom Tov use. The Gemara. Tani Rav Yechiel. Rav Yechiel teaches the following Tanaic source, Uvavachli Asenu Beshura. The sending of gifts is okay, but not with a shura. Shura literally is a row. It's a row of people. Tana ain shura pusa mishlosha b'nei adam. It's a group of no less than three people. So if you're planning to send a gift, don't send it with a row of three people. Rashi points out the problem is that a group like that makes noise, creates... It creates attention, and it gives the impression that they're going to take the item to the market, which of course is not appropriate for Yom Tov. The Gemara continues, Boy Ravashi, Tlosa Gavri Utlosa Mini Mai. What about sending three different items with three people? In other words, what the source taught us clearly was to send, let's say, one item, one type of item with three people. That's not acceptable. But here in this question is, I'm not sending one type, I'm sending three different types of items. I'm sending some wine and some oil and some meat. Now, each one of those items needs one person to carry it. So, is the fact that three people are carrying it okay? Because each one would have necessitated one person anyway. Or is it a problem because I have the three people are together? That's the question, and the Gemara ends off, Teku, leaving it unresolved. Well, we can read the explanation Rashi gives. Mai, mi aslin and boser kominu min, v'shori, do we go according to the item, focusing on the item, and it would be okay. Ki hechol diyochol mishloch ish echod im kol min. I could send one person with the wine that I want to send, and each one ze below ze hashtana mishori. I can send each item without someone going with him. Therefore, even if I have three people together, but each one is carrying a separate item, it's okay. O dilmo hashtomio. Avshal Milsa, or do we say, but right now it is attention getting. So as we said, the Gemara leaves this as unresolved. Boy, Rabbi Shimon Matir Betvua, Tanya, Rabbi Shimon Matir Betvua, Kegoin Chitim Lasus Mem Ludios. We said in this Mishnah that Rabbi Shimon allows the sending of grain on Yom Tov. So you might have asked, what is the use of grain as such on Yom Tov itself? Well, it could be, in the case of wheat, you'd make ludios. Ludios is a type of food. Rashi says, Maichol Chitim, it's a wheat dish. Sorim, Litein Lifnei Behemto. Barley, standard barley, is animal feed. So you can send it, and because it has immediate Yom Tov use, as is, as animal feed. Adoshim, Lasois, Mehen, Resisim. Adoshim is in modern Hebrew, it's explained, it's translated as lentils. So whatever it is that you can make from that, resisin, it's a type of food made from adoshim. We continue with the issue of sending gifts. Mishalchen kelim, of course we're at this new Mishnah. Mishalchen kelim, kelim means in this case begodim, clothing. You can send clothing. Bein tfurim, bein sheinon tfurim. V'yachol pi sheyesh bohem kilayim. Whether they're sewn or they're not sewn. And even if they are made of shatnez. Kilayim is a mixture of wool and linen. V'hein litzor hamoid. Provided it has Yom Tov use. Avolos sandal hamasumar velo minol she'eno tofur. One cannot send a sandal hamasumar. This is explained by Rashi. Avolo sandal shel eitz. It's a shoe that's has a wooden base to it. Umitsupa or it's covered with leather. Umasmeros kvuin bo, and it has nails in it. The nails that are fixed into this shoe. Shigazu chomim alav shelo na'al b'shav z'yom tov. The chachomim, the sages, made a ruling not to wear a sandal hamasumar on Shabbos nor yom tov mishumaisi shoya because of an incident that took place in history. Shenergu harugim b'shabbos al yodov. People were trampled by those wearing a sandal masumar, and an event took place on Shabbos. This is reported in Masechet Shabbos. So there is a special gzeirah against sandal hamasumar, the shoe with nails in it. Velo minol shenatofor. The Mishnah made reference to a shoe that's not sewn together. It has no use as is. Rabbi Yehuda Omer aflo minol lovan, not a shoe that's lovan. Lovan literally is white. It hasn't been dyed yet. The standard shoe color we'll just assume was black, and it wasn't dyed yet, so it has this raw look to it. People would not wear shoes like that. And as the Mishnah says, mipnei shetzorch uman, it requires a craftsman for darkening it, for blackening the shoe. Ze haklal, kol shenusin bo b'yom tov v'shachan oso. Anything that has benefit when it comes to clothing, it has adornment benefit. Rashi says miskashtin, you would wear it. If you would wear it on Yom Tov, so then you can send it on Yom Tov. The Gemara opens up with a question, and we've, in Gemara markings, called this a long question. On the side, under our topic heading, we have the following written, Loma mutar lishloach bigdei kilayim b'yom tov. Why is it allowed to send kilayim clothing, shatnis kulayim, klomar, echem ruyim l'chag? How are they fit? How are they useful for the holiday? As we go through the Gemara, you're going to notice the use of a double underline. So under the Mivneh heading, we've written Shlavim shel birur shel haheter l'shel kilayim v'yom tov. The Gemara will approach this matter in stages, trying to figure out what is the heter for sending kilayim on Yom Tov. The Gemara Bishlamot tefurin chazir l'malbush. I can understand sewn clothing; they're fit for wearing. She'ain tefurim, if they're not sewn, nami chazu l'ksuye. They can be used for covering things. It's basically no worse than a piece of fabric. So unsewn clothing can be used for covering things. Elo kilayim lamai chazu, but the kilayim, the mixed wool linen, which we call shatnez, what is it fit for? The chitema. Again, we emphasized before, these are stages in trying to figure out the issue. They are merely stages, but we at the end of this omid, you see that we end up with the question. So you might say, the chitema, if you try to say chazu lemeimach to say, that shatnez is fit to be placed underneath you. In other words, the assumption right now is that you can't cover yourself with shatnez, but to place it underneath you, to use it as a mat, that would be okay. So the shatnez would have immediate Yom Tov value in that sense. But that's not true. V'hotanya. We have the following Tanaic source. Lo yale alecha. The pasuk is in the context of shatnez. So the pasuk says, "You shall not have shatnez upon you." Aval ata yochol latzioi tachtecha. But from the Torah perspective, you can set it under you. You can spread it out under you. Aval amru chachamim osir lasos came, but the chachamim were more stringent, and they said, you're not allowed to do that." Shemo tichrach lo nimo al besoro. A strand of the shatnez might wind up upon you. In other words, when you have a mat made of fabric, so there are strands that extend from the mat, and they can end up, because of their length, be over you or on you, on your body. And so that you are, in violation of what the Torah said. So the idea of shatnez being placed underneath you is not, not a possibility. So why are you allowed to send shatnez on Yom Tov? V'chitema demafsik midi beini beini. Well, maybe you'll put down on the floor a mat of shatnez of kilayim, and then before you lie on it, you place down something over it. So you have something blocking you from the shatnez. But the Gemara says that also is not a suggestion. V'omer Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi, Omer Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Omer Rabbi Yossi ben Shaul, Omer Rabbi Mishum Kihila Kadisha de Yerushalayim. We have a list of names, and it was said in the name of the holy community of Jerusalem. Afilu Eser Matzoi Zu Al Gabi Zu. Even 10 mattresses, one above the other. Reminds Benny of the fable of the princess and the pea, maybe. It's 10 mattresses, one on top of the other, v'kilayim tachtehen, osulishan aleihem. And at the bottommost level is kilayim. You can't sleep on top of the mattresses, even 10, one on top of the other. Ela, bevilo. Maybe you'll say that you're going to use the shatnez as a curtain. In other words, if you have a door, an opening, you can suspend over the opening a curtain of shatnez. So there, I'm not certainly not wearing it, and it's not underneath me. That too is rejected. Why does halacha say that a vilon is mekabel tumah, subject to becoming defiled? Something does not become defiled unless it can be classified as a kli. If it's not a kli, let's say it's a wall of a house. A wall does not mekabel tumah. That's called a mechitza. A partition is not mekabel tumah, but a vessel is mekabel tumah. So we know that a vilon, a curtain, is mekabel tumah. And why? Mitnei shehashamosh mischamim kenegdo. Because the shamosh, a person who is acting as a servant, he will wrap himself. Imagine you have this a very tall curtain, and the shamosh is standing next to it, so the bottom part of the curtain is near him. He will actually wrap himself in the curtain to warm up. So you see that it's the curtain actually serves as a type of wraparound as well. And that being the case, so it cannot be made of shatnez of kilayim. So the question remains, why is it mutter to send kilayim shatnez on Yom Tov? We continue at the top of Tesvav Amid Aleph. Ela bekushin. Kushin means a coarse fabric. Rashi at the top says begodim kushim shein mechamimin. They don't produce heat. One would not find himself warming up if he wraps himself in it. Mutter leishev alein. According to Rashi, you can even sit on that. That's Rashi's pshat. The Gemara continues, V'chi ha d'yama Rav Huna braid Rav Yeshua, as in accordance with Rav Huna, that said, Hai nimto gamdo denarish sharia. Nimto is an article of clothing. Gamdo means it's coarse, it's hard, a coarse type of clothing from Narish. Narish is the name of a place that is mutter, meaning that even if it's made of kilayim, it's okay. It doesn't produce warmth. Omar Papa, Ardalin ein bohem mishum kilayim. Rashi says Ardalin ra'isi b'tshuvas ha'gainim shirigilin l'lof shon tachas min aleim. The toilin aleihem or shel tioshim mu'bodim tachas kark ison ukeneged ha'okev shel regel yesh oisin oisa shel tsemer v'koren osa ardalin. So what Rashi is describing is a type of foot gear that they would place under their shoes, and he says that does not present the ardalin does not present a kilayim problem because it's coarse. Omar Rava, Hani Tzori. Rava deals with Tzori are pouches. Pouches, the word Tzror is to tie something up. You tie coins, for example, into a pouch. So, Hani Tzori, Depshiti, if they're coin pouches, Ein Bohem Mishum Kilayim. There is no kilayim problem. Rashi points out, Tzori, Depshiti, Ein Bohem Mishum Kilayim, Beged Kilayim, Shitzurin Bo Mos. Shatnez fabric that you wrapped around some coins. You tied coins into this shatnez fabric. Mutter lusiton b'cheko, you can put them inside of your, into your pockets. Shehamois makshin oisei v'einoi mechamem. The coins make it create a certain sense of coarseness to it or hardness to it, and as a result, it won't add to your heat. It won't warm you, so that there's no, so that if the even though you've put it inside your chekov, you put it in into your bosom or your pockets, and it seems like another layer of clothing, you don't have to worry about that. There's another kind of tzori, and that's what we have base here, the bazrani. Bazrani are seeds. So that kind of pouch, yesh bohem mishum kilayim, they and as a result of that, you shouldn't put it into your bosom. You shouldn't put it into your on your body. Rav Ashi Omar, echod ze ve'echod ze ein bohem mishum kilayim. Rav Ashi is more lenient. He says even the seed type pouch does not present a kilayim problem. L'fishein derech chimum b'kach. As the Gemara says, it doesn't add. It's not the normal way that a person increases his warmth by using pouches, even seed pouches. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.